We're at Garforth Working Men's Club today.
And yes.
We're with Tony Benn.
That's right.
Welcome to Garforth.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for coming. Could you just tell us a little bit about issues that you're interested in?
Well, I left Parliament about 7 years ago, and I wanted more time for politics. And I spent all my time going round. I mean, a week or two ago I was in Dublin over the Lisbon Treaty. I'm going to Madrid next week to discuss Venezuela. I was at Glastonbury Sunday. I do it all the time, and I meet a lot of people and learn from them, and I enjoy it very much indeed. So that's why I'm here. When Dave wrote and said, would I come, I said, of course I would. And the Working Men's Club here is like so many that I've sort of lived and worked in all my life in Bristol and Chesterfield. I was the MP for Chesterfield for many years, and it's a lovely, friendly atmosphere. That's what I feel about it. And I shall learn, because I have heard myself speak before, but what I haven't heard is what the people of Garforth want to say and ask.
So you up for answering questions tonight, then?
Oh, yes. I'm not going to talk for very long. I have heard myself, as I said. I'd much rather listen to what people here say and have a discussion. That's really what it's about. It's to give people an opportunity to make their point and ask questions, and that's what I'm really, really looking forward to.
What's currently kind of going on in your life at the moment?
Well, I mean, the thing that really... Hello.
Good afternoon.
Well, obviously the war is a big thing, isn't it? I mean, 1 million Iraqis killed, and 2 wars. You have to deal with that. Then also deal with the way religion is used to whip up hostility and make war more likely. Then a bit about democracy, about the environment, and then just opening it up. But... I'm in a lucky position at 83. I don't want anyone to vote for me. So people can relax. They don't think, oh, he's come here to get support. I haven't come here to get... I've come here to open a discussion and listen. I'm not very much interested in the politics of gossip and personalities. I mean, the thing that concerns me, as I mentioned, the war, pensioners living in poverty, students who want to go to college having to borrow a lot of money and saddled with great debt, need for council housing, because a lot of people now, people will be repossessed as a result of the so-called credit crunch. All that's what politics is really about. It isn't just about the individuals, you know.
Do you think the credit crunch is really happening then? Do you think this is something...
I think it's a very, very serious situation. People have been told for years, you know, borrow and spend, and those days have come to an end now. And I think we've got to think it all out all over again. I don't want the world run by gamblers. I want governments to be elected to do what has to be done, and I think it's a very, very profound change.
You told us a minute ago that you were at Glastonbury this weekend. What were you doing?
Well, I've gone every year to a thing called the Left Field. It's a socialist presence there. First time I went, it was a crummy little tent with about 100 people. The last few years it's been 5,000 people there, and I spoke twice there, and then another I went to the Green Field where the environmentalists were meeting. And I really, really enjoy Glastonbury, but I'm not in the musical world at all. But the politics and music go together.
I read somewhere that you were vegetarian, is that
yes.
true?
Yes. My son Hillary, who's the MP for Leeds Central, said to me and my wife 30-odd years ago, maybe more, said, look, if the world ate the grain instead of feeding it to animals and killing them, there'd be enough food for everybody. And that day my wife and I became vegetarians. And it's a very logical argument, that. Why feed the animals when people are starving? So it's not the total answer, but I think it has got some contribution to make to meeting the world's problems of famine and drought.
We ask a lot of our interviewees their kind of daily activities and what their day-to-day life is like. Would you like...
Yeah, I get up at 7 o'clock in the morning. I have breakfast in my bedroom. I live alone. My wife died 8 years ago. I put a simple tray and I have a bun and some orange juice and a mug of tea. Then I go downstairs to my office in the basement, switch on the internet. Usually about, I don't know, 150 emails have come overnight, most of them spam. And then I have to deal with my car. I don't have a secretary, deal with my own letters and reply to the email. Then I'm writing a book at the moment. Then I do all these meetings. I mean, I mentioned some of them. So that's my life, and I go to bed about midnight. Does that satisfy you?
That's brilliant. Thanks a lot for that. That's
okay.
Lovely. So you've come to hear Tony Benn tonight at Garforth Working Men's Club at the Garforth Festival. Why did you come along?
Oh, I'm of that age, having been interested in politics since the 60s. he's one of the characters, you know, it's a chance to see him and hear him share his views.
Have you heard him before? Have you seen him before?
No, I haven't, no.
And was he everything you expected?
I think he's on magnificent form, he has absolute character, yes.
Was there anything that surprised you in what he said, or any of the issues that...
Not really. I mean, he's still a consummate politician. The way he can address an atheist in the audience and a committed Christian in the audience, still have them feeling he's on both those sides. He's a consummate politician still.
But is he as sort of, I don't know, as sickly, I'll put it in other words than that, slimy perhaps, as other politicians?
No, not at all. He's one of the most genuine people I've ever heard. But he's skillful at keeping people on side.
So do you want to tell us why you came tonight?
To see Tony Blair.
Tony.
Tony Benn. I just thought I'd like to see you. I mean, I've been a bit of a fan, not as harsh as you think, but I think this is possibly one of the few opportunities I'm going to get to actually see the man in action. Famous he is for giving public speeches in working men's clubs at Trafalgar Square over many years. I just thought, I see what the real thing is in the flesh, as it were.
You've not heard him before?
No, this is the first time I've seen him. Well, obviously, I've seen Montalien for many years as a political commentator, but never actually live in what I suppose is an environment where he feels most at home, talking to people directly.
Was there anything he said that really sort of got you going, or you were surprised at his views?
The thing that surprised me most is how he stepped round the issue of Christianity and his belief in it. It was interesting that he was less forthright. He was sort of kind of playing both sides quite carefully there. That interested me.
Do you want to tell us why you came tonight to see Tony Benn?
Well, I basically came because I've read a couple of his books and I'm really interested in him. I'm quite politically active, so I like sort of keeping up with sort of speakers. So I go to a lot of these kind of events. I really admire him. I think he's amazing for 83. I hope I'm that lucid when I'm 83. I just wanted to really know what his take was on a lot of events, and it's been really interesting, so that's really why.
Do you like his skills at talking without notes?
Oh, I do. I think that's absolutely amazing. I know how he does that. He obviously, you can see that he is a politician in that respect because he's got those skills. And I think he's a great orator, actually, as well as a great writer, because I've read some of his books. He's just got a real way with words. So
do you think
amazing.
He comes over as a politician? You know, the typical image we've got
no,
as
not
a politician.
In the typical. I think the image we've often got is he's kind of quite sleazy. And he doesn't give that. He doesn't give that at all. Actually, he gives a very sort of down to earth image, kind of a man of the people, really. And I think that's why a lot of people really like him and relate to him.
Why did you come tonight to see Tony Benn?
I'm a reconstructive socialist, and I believe in a much simpler way of life than the way that we've got involved in now. In spending money all the time, buying things. That's not what life's all about. We're not here to buy things.
Was he everything you expected, or have you heard him before?
It's absolutely wonderful.
How do you compare him with other politicians that you hear and see on the TV and radio?
Well, I think that the politicians nowadays think they have to be celebrities. They have to come out with a snappy soundbite. They haven't got any gravitas. And that's what Tony Benn's got, he's got gravitas.
Was there anything about any of his views that shocked you? Or that's not Tony, the Tony I know.
It is the Tony I know.
Yeah, great, thanks a lot.
For a long time, I've really admired Tony Benn as somebody who I think has been a tremendous advocate of the kind of thinking that people like me have in common with him.
And what do you think of him so far?
Well, I thought he was brilliant tonight. He just inspired me. He's obviously so full of passion and zeal. And I think probably the main thing is his honesty. He just came across, many politicians come across as being false and somehow self-interested, and you can see through them. But Tony Benn really came across to me as somebody who's passionate about what he believes in and genuine.
I understand you attended the launch of David Davis' campaign in North Yorkshire. Would you like to give us a bit of a background as to why you supported it?
Well, I've known him for a long time. I think he's absolutely right about the 42 days. It was forced through on a three-line whip and some backdoor deals, and he decided to take it to his constituents. One reason I think he did it was because the Prime Minister said there was public support for 42 days, and he's testing it in his own constituency. And I mean, he's very much the opposite end of the political spectrum from me, but sometimes libertarians meet round the back. And I'm doing a debate with him in London next week about the meaning of democracy. It's not a debate really, it's an exploration of it, and we will agree about some things, the Lisbon Treaty and this, but on other things we disagree. But I think to take an issue back to your constituents, he's given up his job and his prospects of a cabinet position, and I think that he's done politics good.
Great. Back to the miners' strike. Earlier in the evening you had a question about it, and you were drawing some conclusions about the, if you like, the ramifications of the miners' strike these days. Do you want to just go over a few of those? For instance, how history will view it, and in a way, history's perhaps changing its view, if there is one historical view, changing its view on the miners' strike because of the current problems with energy and supply and price rises and so forth.
Well, they're thinking of opening pits now. I mean, the craziness of it is we're importing coal at a price twice as much as pits were costing when they were closed. And so it was a brutal thing to do. And Mrs. Thatcher did it because she hated the trade union movement and saw the miners as the strongest trade union. But it was economically lunatic to do it. And of course it had a terrible effect on mining communities. I mean, I remember Dennis Skinner saying at a meeting in the old days when I was young, nobody ever locked their door. Really now you lock your door and some unemployed kid kicks it open and pinches your video. There is a connection between crime and the security of a community. So I thought it was a horrific thing to have done. And the courage of the miners will influence people in the future, I think. And they say, well, if the miners could stick it out for a year, why don't we have a go? And in the defence of basic principles.
Do you think the 25th anniversary is going to...
No, it's 84-5, wasn't it? So
yes, it's the 25th next year.
Oh, 25th, yes. Well, I hope something's done, because some of the old members of the women's support groups and the miners do have events, but the media don't cover them.
Mm. That was one of the big impacts, wasn't it? The women's influence and the women's work in the miners' strike.
Brilliant organisers, and they kept it going in many ways. It was very, very tough for women.
Okay, we've seen an example tonight of you holding forth to a large public meeting, as it were, in Garforth in the Working Men's Club. This is something that's grist to your mill. It's something that you've been brought up with. How you were, presumably, came through the era when political meetings were the main means of communicating with people. And nowadays, of course, as you said, there's the internet and the World Wide Web or whatever. How do you see, first of all, what were the important things about public meetings in those days and the influential characters in it? And secondly, how do you think the internet and everybody's got their own MySpace page and so forth, how's that going to influence political debate?
Well, I think the really significant thing is the media ignore them. I mean, I do meetings like this every night, but the media don't cover it. I mean, in the Stop the War campaign in 2003, we had 2 million people, biggest meeting in the history of Britain, probably. Media just covered the scuffles. And I think there is a competition between the media who want to dominate the agenda and people whom they don't like, and they just don't cover it. I'm not saying it's unfair, they just don't cover it. And yet tonight, not only did I get far more out of, well, this evening, if I'd done a broadcast to a million people, maybe, what would I have got out of it? Nothing, except to chat to the producer. And maybe the people who came had an opportunity to ask the question, which they never would have had if they'd heard a broadcast. So I think this is real politics. And sometimes you get quite strong arguments. I mean, people put different points of view tonight.
Mm.
But they went away and made up their own mind. And if they enjoyed it, I certainly enjoyed it. It was a lovely, it really did take me back to the days in the miners' welfare.
I think one of the differences in your approach is that you're willing to listen, whereas presumably the old meetings you used to go to when you were starting out in politics were pretty much, you had to, it was like selling something. You had to convince.
No,
or
people
was it?
Always argued. Oh, no,
did
yeah.
they? Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. interested in, and that's what the fun of it. I remember my dad telling a story. He said he had a question put that he found it impossible to answer when at an election meeting. I said, what was that, Dad? He said, a man got up and said, could the candidate tell the meeting what hope he thinks there is for the country if people like him are elected to Parliament? Well, there was just no possible answer to that. Oh, and they're very, very clever. Questions are very, very clever. I mean, tonight wasn't controversial in the sense people came to do me down because I wasn't asking for support. But, I mean, some of the meetings were very strong.
Including, presumably, people come along to disrupt the meetings. And
some do, yes, yeah. That has happened, yeah. My dad taught me, he said, always support the heckler against the audience. And it was a shrewd thing to say because, you know, when hecklers go on, people say, oh, shut up. And he said, no, you should say, let him have his speak. And I've had hecklers onto the platform say, look, if you want to say it, come and say it on the platform. And then that really, to some extent, destabilizes them. But at the same time, people say, well, that was fair. He wasn't trying to dominate.
Okay, thank you very much.